In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a seven-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype and what they think you can be.
All episodes of American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, are now available wherever you get your podcasts from Blue Wire.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. A nice Wednesday morning to Dropping the Gloves. It's actually Wednesday evening. I listen to this podcast in the evening. So welcome to Dropping the Gloves on a nice Wednesday evening. Tim, you're looking fresh tonight. How's it going?
What are you usually doing when you're listening to the show?
You don't want to know. In a bathtub, just eyes closed, just loving my voice, loving me some May, baby. You know that.
I happen to know you don't even have a bathtub in your new house.
That's a bold-faced lie. How dare you? We have a bathtub. You take that back, my friend.
Do you?
No. Yes, I do. It's good. You know what? The first few seasons, I would say, of this show, I didn't listen to the episodes. I was like, oh, I don't want to listen to it, but I found it's good for the production value. It's good to kind of learn from your mistakes. So I listen, not every episode, but every so often I'll listen to one. I say every once a month, I throw it on, just give her a listen. I don't know if that's being egotistic or what's that, narcissistic, listening to myself, but hey, whatever. Anyways, thank you, everybody. I have some good news.
I know.
We were just talking before we came on there. And I don't know if anybody believes in karma, or if anybody just believes in that sort of thing, God, or just, you know, things happening for a reason. I certainly do. And I was just scrolling some news before we came on just to see if any late breaking stuff, because gosh, last week we were doing an episode and I got off the podcast and midway through the episode, Chara signed with Washington. And I was like, oh, well, we missed that. So I don't want to miss anything anymore. We do a last minute check, and I'm glad I did, because I thought Christmas was 2 weeks ago, but Christmas came again. Evander Kane has filed for bankruptcy. How sweet are those words? Like, honestly, from just a pure fan perspective, it couldn't happen to a worse guy. I love that. What are your initial? I just told you, Tim, what are your thoughts?
My honestly, and this is just like, I feel like I'm a very sympathetic, empathetic person. He is going to be absolutely tortured on the ice with the Chirps, isn't it? They're going to be so awful to him, aren't they?
It's just, it will rain down Chirps. Like, it will rain down guys carrying dollar bills onto the ice saying, Gainer, I'll take you for dinner afterwards. I know you need it. Like, hey, buddy, you want a quarter? Like, just...
Oh no.
Relentless. And there's nothing he can say. Like, he brought this on himself. This isn't like out of nowhere, just like throwing insults at a guy, kick him while he's down. He brought this on himself. He's the one who tweeted pictures of himself with stacks of money. He's the one who bragged about his contracts. He's the one who is always talking about money and this and that and doing videos about how much he has.
What happened last year with the casino? What was that story?
So he went to the casino before the playoff game in Vegas, if you recall. That was 2 years ago. It was before the Western Conference Finals, I believe. And then the Vegas came calling for debts, I think, before the season last year. And he's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Because he racked up a bunch of debt there, didn't he?
Yeah, something like that. And hadn't paid it off.
Is there ever an offseason where he doesn't like get into some kind of controversy? He's already done it this year with his tweets with Ryan Reeves, and didn't he called out one of those YouTube guys? Like,
yeah,
he just can't keep his nose out of it. I don't understand. He just signed a 7-year, $49 million contract, and he just filed for Chapter 7 bankruptcy in California. And he had, what do you think his debt is that he wrote down on his filing?
$12 million.
It's $26.8 million of debt.
Oh my goodness.
Isn't that like, it's incredible that you can rack up that much debt. And maybe he's including, he has a couple houses. He's, you know, he can't afford the mortgage. Maybe the law or the pandemic, he wasn't getting paid. Who knows? This could be a strategic financial move where he gets out from under these houses and moves on. And he's still getting paid money. I don't know the ins and outs of this, but just from an outside perspective, it looks terrible for Evander. It looks great for Ryan Reeves. He's just probably cocked and loaded with all these tweets he's going to unload on this guy. It's just, do you feel an ounce of empathy for Evander Kane right now?
A little, yeah. I mean, it's a horrible thing to happen for anyone, even you're a guy that is as controversial as him, and a guy that probably, I mean, it couldn't have happened to a better person if you're talking about like the personality and just the bling and all that stuff. But yeah, I do still feel a little bit of it. Do you?
Not really. He's made almost $53 million so far in his career. So he's made a ton of money. That's mind-boggling numbers. And he still has another 40 schmil to go, or maybe whatever. I don't know how many years he's been in San Jose, but he's got a lot of money to come, maybe $35 million left in that contract. The fact that he is in debt, $26.8 million, it's staggering. You have to do work to be that much in debt after making $52 million. Like, it's not like you can just make a couple bad investments. You got to make a lot of bad investments. And you got to really, really swing and a miss on a lot of real estate stuff. And maybe he's a terrible gambler. Maybe he should hold on 15 instead of doubling down. I don't know what his problem is. But hopefully he can sort things out. Like, he has time. He's only 30. What is he? 30. He's 29. So he still has some earning years ahead of him. I don't know. Will this straighten him out? Will he change his ways after this? What is your prediction?
I'm thinking about Ryan Reeves. He's got a notebook out right now. He's just writing down everything he can.
I don't know. I would just feel bad. I kick him when he's down. I don't care. But if Reeves, he's already dominated every exchange he's had with Evander Kane. He beat him up on the ice. He's ripped him apart on Twitter. His brother tore him a new one. Is there like anything left of Evander Kane to make fun of? It's like he's a beaten and bloodied man at this point. He's filed for bankruptcy. He's broke. He's like thinking about not playing this year. I've heard articles about he's like thinking about opting out. It's like, oh, that poor kid.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think he gets his life together. I think he's too, like, I don't want to say cocky, but just strong-headed to even just turn things around. It's bizarre. It's totally bizarre.
Are there any guys in a situation like this? Are players reaching out to, like, offer him money, like, for real? Or no, they wipe their hands of this?
Well, there's different levels of guys, and I don't think he's been well-liked wherever he's gone. You know, he played in Atlanta. He played in Winnipeg. He's played in San Jose. I know a fair amount of guys on all those teams, and I can tell you what, ain't nobody opened their checkbook for Evander Kane right now. Like, he's not the most well-liked cat, you know, in the NHL. And if it was our guest who's coming on in a little bit, he would get some phone calls because he's a well-liked guy. He made a lot of good friends throughout the NHL, and I've heard nothing but good things about him. So if it was him, people would open up their wallets. But for Evander Kane, not a chance in the world. Not a chance. Anyways, making a call. Do you think Dustin Byfuglien's making a call?
No.
No. Buff hates him. So it's just, I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, how you lose $52 million and then go into debt $26 million. So that's a $78 million swing there, Tim. Like, that's almost $100 million. Like, that's like Mike Tyson numbers.
Yeah.
It's unfathomable.
It's sad. It really is.
How bad at gambling do you have to be? Or do you just think he shows off? He goes in there and he can't stand to be at the $20 table. He's got to go to the $15,000 table and ball out. Like, that could be it, where he just, you know, he wanted to be the dude. He wanted to be that guy who just controlled the room. I'm endless amounts of money. He wants to be that Dan Bilzerian guy who's just balling out. Well, Look what happens, Evander. I don't know. I'll fight him for money. $50 each, Canadian. I'll do it.
How about Jake Paul, Logan Paul, those guys?
Those guys are jokes. Those guys are so – it's so funny how fake everything is. It really is.
One of them is going to be fighting Mayweather this year.
It's all fake, though. It's all fake. Mayweather wanted to, he could work that guy. Absolutely, destroy that guy. He's been boxing for a couple years. If I stepped in the ring with Mayweather, I would not expect to hit him once, not even once. And I would be beat up in a round. Like, he would work my body, he would work my liver, and I would be out. Like, it wouldn't even be close. So, I don't know. I just think there's so much – everybody wants to be so popular and so liked and in front of the camera and have so much media on them at all times. It's not good for you. I got our little podcast. That's all we need, Tim.
Do you think Evander's going to have a Players Tribune article at all and just talk about his feelings? And his?
No. Well, he'll have some where he can get some money. He'll go on a talk show to try to get some do-re-mi.
Write a book.
He'll use it for some angle. I was a victim. Wasn't my fault. People used me. Not my fault. It's like BS.
Does every player have a financial advisor or no?
Well, there's different, like, people have financial advisors. I have a guy, and all I did was just give him all my money. I said, here, take it. I'll call you in 50 years. And that's what I did. Other guys have guys who they pay their bills. They take care of all their stuff. They pay their mortgage and they look for houses and they're more involved in their life. I was more of a hands-off guy where I was like, okay, I'm making this money. It's a lot of money. I want to save it. I'm going to take this portion of every check and not even look at it. So it's not even real money to me. So I would get a check, just say for $100. I'd go, here, take $60. I'm not even going to see this money. I'll live off that 40. And I did that for 8 years. And so even to this day, I don't want to touch that money. So if you come to my house, it's nothing great, you know, but when I turn 65, boy, cha-ching, you're going to see me balling out. Oh my goodness. It's going to be great. I'm just going to go crazy. Going to be have a yacht somewhere. It's going to be nice, but you know, it's okay.
The dichotomy of that and an Evander situation is just mind-boggling.
It's completely reverse. We lived completely different lives. He balled out, he got the mansion, I got the okay house in the dumpy neighborhood next to the rich neighborhood. That's what we would do every city we would go to. Like, where do you want to rent? Where's the really good neighborhood? Los Gatos? Let's go right next to that and get an okay house. That's what we did. So when everyone would ask where you live, I'm like, yeah, just right by Los Gatos. Sounds good. But he's on top of a hill. He's got ocean views and an infinity pool, and he probably pays, you know, 15 grand a month, 20 grand a month. Good for him. And he's $50 million, $27 million in debt. Anyways, moving on. Let's talk about our guest. We got someone coming in. So I was going to get Ray Bourque, and I just didn't want to. I don't know why. Maybe we weren't prepared. Maybe I just wasn't excited to talk to Ray. I don't know. I've been having a little Twitter or texting thread with some of my friends from San Jose back in the day. Tim sent me a picture of Mike Brown. And Tim, described the picture for me.
Well, it's on Instagram. And he's holding a hockey stick in some kind of like lunge pose. And he's just absolutely naked, and there's a flag of Canada over his.
I think it was USA.
The USA over his junk, and that's it. And he's just staring at the camera.
It's a very strange post. So I, of course, took that image and sent it to the boys, and I included Mike. And I was like, "You really set the bar high, Mike." And it was just an onslaught of rips on Mike Brown, and it was great. It was Joe Thornton. It was Pavelski. It was Patty Marlowe. It was Couture. It was Al Stalock. It was everybody all in on Mike Brown. And it was great. And it's ongoing to this day. So I was like, we got to get Mike Brown on the show. He's just one of these guys who he is a lovable character. He's not the brightest bulb in the house, you know. He's not going to win any spelling contest, but he's just a good guy. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're getting with a Mike Brown. If you're going to go into a bar and you want someone who's going to have your back regardless, Mike Brown's your guy. Like, he's a friend for life. I played with him on two teams, the San Jose Sharks. And I actually, when I went to the Montreal Canadiens, he was on the team, which was kind of cool. So I walked in the locker room, I'm like, Mikey, what's going on? And so we're going to have him on the show. Do you know anything about Mike Brown, Tim?
Very little. I know the name, obviously. I know he had some good fights. I know he played at Michigan, which is pretty cool, but not much more than that.
That's what I want to ask him, because I just said he wasn't the brightest bulb, you know, in the house. I was looking up a stat. I was shocked when I saw he went to University of Michigan. Absolutely floored. I was like, this guy went to university for 2 years? Like, this is it boggled my mind. So I want to ask him about that. I want to ask him why he left after 2 years. Like, why, if you get a scholarship to the University of Michigan, he wasn't a superstar by any right. He got drafted, I think, in the fourth or fifth round. Why would you leave school early to go to the NHL than just end up in the AHL for a few years? So I want to pick his brain about that. I want to talk to him about, you know, his San Jose time. He's got a crazy injury story. Blue Wire Hustle. It's a brand new program where you can host your own podcast at Blue Wire. You can be just like me. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Now, it might not get to dropping the gloves level. It might be better. I don't know. Now, here's your chance. As a part of the program, you receive a personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. So many tips and tricks. And on top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher. I don't even know what Stitcher is, but we will get your stuff pushed out there. And the best part is, it's only $15 a month. We pay $15 a month for Blue Wire to do this. So you're going to get the same deal as I do. It's unbelievable. So whether you're just starting from scratch or you have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to level up your sports experience. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/bluewire. Acceptance is limited. They're not just going to take everybody. So you got to have a good idea or a good podcast. So get in there. Check out the description box to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join.
He's here now. Should we let him in?
Let him in.
All right, here we go. Mike Brown.
Mike Brown, are you there?
What's up, John?
Oh, you look so beautiful.
Oh, of course. Yeah, long time no see.
I know. You look exactly the same. How are you, my friend? We're taping right now. You know what we just found out?
What's up?
Evander Kane filed for bankruptcy.
Come on.
Dead serious. Do you know him at all?
I don't know him at all, but shouldn't he take this fight then? Isn't there a big talk?
Apparently he, I don't know what's going on. Okay. First rules. We don't swear on the podcast, Mike.
All right. We'll try.
I know you're not a big swear guy, so that's not a big issue for you, but can we keep it clean?
No, I got to be PG.
He was, he tried to fight some YouTuber. I don't know what, maybe that's why he's doing it, 'cause he's broke, but it just came out. I just read the article. He's like $27 million in debt.
How is that even possible?
He's made 52 million bucks.
What are you spending it on?
I don't know. Like, how much did you make in your career?
I don't know. I would probably guess somewhere around 6 million-ish. Maybe.
Yeah. How would you even spend 6 million? Like, it boggles my mind that guy could blow through that much money. It's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I guess it's all relative, but the last time I ever saw anything about him since, like you already asked, I don't know anything about him, but last time I saw anything about messing around, he had all the stacks of cash. He was in Vegas or something. And didn't he get in trouble or NHL caught it or something?
He's not the smartest guy. Did you fight? You never fought him.
No, he never fought me.
I like that, Mike. He never fought. Mike, my co-host is Tim. He doesn't usually say much during interviews. He'll just sit there, but that's Tim. Mike, Tim.
Hey, Tim. How's
it? Mike? How are you?
Yeah, good.
So you're coming back from practice, Pitsy. Who do you coach?
Wait, hold on. What is this? Arm, Pitsy, Brownie? What are we going to go by this interview, first of all?
That was one of my questions. What is your nickname? You have so many.
I don't know. You know what, though? It's funny how it derived, though. I mean, like, if we backdate how Jumbo came up with the final result, I don't even know if we can track it.
So for the listeners, Mike Brown, his nickname is Pitsy. armpit, arm, and brownie. I don't know where armpit, pitsy, or arm came from. I just started calling you that because everybody else did.
It started when we were on the plane. We were playing cards. Obviously, I sweat to begin with. I mean, don't get me wrong. I sweat to begin with. But when we're playing cards for high stakes, I'm going to sweat a little bit more. You know, wearing the dress shirt after a game. I got a couple pit stains going. It started off. Maybe it started off with armpit or arm.
I think he made you lift your arm, and he goes armpit, and it just went. It just evolved.
Yeah, I don't know. Now we just text with arm emojis. That's it.
Your armpit stain was bigger than a dinner plate. Yeah. Not even exaggerating.
It might have been a salad plate.
No, dinner plate, full course meal, dinner plate under his arm. It was so funny.
Yeah, I don't want to lose. I take those games. Oh. I take those games seriously.
Oh, good. How you doing, my friend? How are you?
Good.
You look good. I was nervous that you were going to say no to this interview.
Say no to you? Come on.
Oh, I was nervous because I've never really had someone on the show who I absolutely dummied in a fight.
So, I was hoping we were going to go over this. So let's recap. You know, what is it? Dropping the Gloves. Hey, I'm not a podcast guy. First of all, let's get this on the table. I don't listen.
The name of the show is Dropping the Armpit.
Dropping the Armpit. I don't listen to podcasts. I've seen a couple spitting chicklets. I don't pay attention to any of this stuff. I don't even know how it works, but I was going to bring it up. I think I'm thinking about making my own, but I would have no idea what to do. But hey, it's Dropping the Gloves. So I thought we were going to be talking about fighting the whole time, right?
I will touch on it. I absolutely dummied Mike in the minors. We went into Winnipeg. I was with Houston.
I'm curious. I'm listening to your side of the story here. I know we've gone back and forth. So I'm going to let you have the mic, and then I'll go.
So I don't know what the score was. I think you guys were beating us by quite a bit. And the game was out of hand, and I was just getting fed up. I'm like, you know what? I got to get out of here. We're in Winnipeg. I want to go to Moxie's. Let's move it along here. So Mike came over to me, and I think we collided.
Well, hold on. Okay, keep going.
I feel like we came together at the blue line, and we shed the mitts, and I just got him with a strong right, and he went down, and he was down goes Brown. And I skated off the ice with the fans booing me. And I was like the Hanson brothers leaving. I was like, take that, Winnipeg.
Hey, are you done dreaming yet? Hey, the way it actually happened was, I don't know the score of the game. You could have been right. I don't know that part. I toppled over one of your players, completely hammered him mid-ice. I think it was right at the red line. My head... As I hit him, my head hit his helmet. My jaw hit the top of his helmet as I completely flattened him, came over the top. As I'm laying on the ground on all fours, holding my jaw, as I find out after the game, it's broken. And you, 6'11", come in at me and throw a couple haymakers, uppercuts while I'm on the ground. I get after the game, I get the image, broken jaw.
Win, Mike.
Yeah, you think the jaw was broken before the fight even started?
That was a definite loss for me. If I could take that hit back, holy man.
I take that as a TKO, my friend.
Hey, you did come out on top, but that's how you came out on top for sure.
I am crying. I didn't remember that. I thought we just fought.
Yeah, right.
What a greaseball move I did. Oh, maybe, man. I broke your jaw. Maybe it wasn't the helmet. Maybe it was me. I apologize.
It was probably a mix of both. Knowing myself, I probably broke it before the game.
Oh, my goodness. I was just telling the listeners how great of a guy you were. We played together on two teams, the San Jose Sharks and the Montreal Canadiens, for a very, very short time.
Yeah, what was that? Very short. A couple hours?
Literally like 12 hours. When you heard I was getting called up to Montreal, what was everybody saying in the locker room? Were they like, great, here comes the circus?
Well, that's what it was. I mean, it was the circus at that time, right? They were doing the whole, which I love. Hey, going back, like, I'm sure you've told this story about the All-Star game and all that and how it played out. I completely support what you did. By the time you were coming over there, it was already a, I don't want to say the word, but crap show.
Oh, yeah, it was a mess.
And it was already a mess. And I think for me, myself, it was already a mess because I got picked up off of waivers. They had pretty much like 75-80% of the team that was already injured. They had brought me in there to protect some of those minor league guys that were playing towards the end of the season. And that was already a mess. They had Carey Price out. And then I think they just added to it. They brought you in. It was just more of a show. I think for both of us being there, it was a little goofy. And the way it turned out, I guess it ended up being pretty goofy. But
you were a breath of fresh air walking in that locker room. But yeah, was anybody saying like, I don't want this guy coming in here? Like, you know who rubbed me the wrong way was Lars Eller. And I don't want to put you on the spot, but that guy just bothered me. You know, he just, anyways, go
quiet,
ahead.
Though. He was a quiet kid. I didn't have any issues with anybody. I can't really say I've had any issues with any of my teammates in the past, except for you, but that was a quiet team. And most of the all-stars, most of the big guys there, they were injured. So the time that I had with them, it wasn't real hockey time. Like, you know what it's like when the guys are injured, they're in the training room, they're screwing around, they're on the tables, they're in and out of the locker room all goofing around and doing their treatment, and they're on the ice before and after. So you don't really get the full effect of what the guy's like. And obviously me as a fourth line plug, I was skating with all the bag skates with them before and after practice. So that was only that was pretty much the only time I really got to see those guys.
Yeah, they weren't very fun anyways. They're losers.
Yeah, you know what? Hey, that was one of my shortest stints besides Edmonton. And hey, I'm not going to complain. I had some pretty good cities I played in. I respect all the Canadian fans, especially in Toronto. They really took a liking to me, so I can't complain. You know, I owe a big thanks to them for sure.
You're just so diplomatic, Mike. You're just friends with, like, what like I said earlier, Tim, the guy's friends with everybody. Because I was like, do you think any, or Tim was asking if anybody's going to loan Evander Kane money. And I was like, not a chance. I've heard nothing but bad things about the guy. And I was like, I would loan Mike Brown money. Like, he's the best guy ever. So,
that's so nice of you, John.
You fit the bill. All right. Anyways,
hey, speaking of money, I thought we would go over this too about our group text the other day. I thought maybe we'd try to promote some TV show of the bet we made in Lake Tahoe. I thought we would get this on the table.
That bet. What was that bet? You could run up the mountain in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah. So I don't know what is this, some legendary mountain? Well, we did it as like a pre-season bonding trip, I guess that you want to call it. And what we walked the hill, we walked it, and we had Bernsey with his 5,000 pound backpack on him. He had his walking sticks. We ended up walking this hill in what, 2.5 hours? I think
it was a mountain. It was called Heavenly Resort Mountain.
And it's steep. And yeah. It's steep as can be. Like, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But they said what? Like, people struggle running it in 2 hours. And we walked the thing, I think, in 2.5. We all got up to the top, and there wasn't a problem. I think what happened was we got back on the bus after the trip, and I said, man, I don't know what happened, because we talked to the guy that said it would be that's what the certain amount of time would be to run it. And I'm like, for sure I can do that.
You and then said it like an hour.
Bet. I don't know if it was an hour or 2 hours or what it was. Maybe it was the hour, and then we changed it, and then we gave myself a little bit better chance.
Listen, if one of my viewers wants to step up to the plate, or listeners, this would be a great show. Mike's in shape. He's got an incredible personality.
Probably the best shape I've ever been in.
And we could have all the boys come out. I'm talking Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture, Scott Hannon. Who else? Patty Marleau.
Hey, we'll even recreate what we did. We'll jump off the cliff. Some of the guys will sit on the boat and just watch, and they'll chicken out. But hey, we'll put that all on the show. You know, put it out there.
Was that one of the only times with a team? So we, for the before the season, the team decided we needed to bond, and we went to Lake Tahoe, and we just were there for like 3 days. We hung out, we had some drinks, I think we played golf, we went on a boat ride, we hiked up the hill, we just did a bunch of stuff as a team. Was that one of the only times as a team you did that in all your cities? Did you ever do that with other teams?
We have done that. I've done that a lot. Actually, Vancouver.
Really?
Vancouver, we did that every single year. And that was, well, you know what? I take that back. As a team alone, like just the players, just the guys, that might have been my first actually going somewhere and doing something like that. Mm-hmm. We've gone, like other teams, they've gone and done training camp like that, and then the guys end up hanging out in those cities. And what I say by Vancouver is you got plenty of options. You got Vernon, you got Whistler, you got places where you can go. And even though you're with all the management and you're there for training camp, I would say you can still venture off and do some pretty cool stuff with the guys, and you can make it a guy's trip, and you can make something out of it. But I think that was actually, just the guys alone. And what was that? Was that the second year? After we had a poor year, I think the first year.
No, I was only there 1 year. So it was right after you guys lost to LA, got swept 4 in a row after you're up 3-0. And then we went on that trip to try to turn the boat. It didn't work. We had a terrible year. Like it was an absolute train wreck of a season. So I doubt they did it again.
Yeah.
But anyways, Pitsy, you mentioned Toronto. I've had some of my best memories in Toronto. I've scored a lot of points there. I also went after Phil Kessel. What was it like in that locker room with Kessel and Phaneuf and Orr and Kadri when you guys had so much, you had so many expectations? What was it like? Just break it down. Was there infighting? Was it just too much pressure for you guys? Was Carlisle just too much to deal with? What happened?
Well, there were a couple changes. I first got there, the team, they were struggling to begin with. And I got there with, it was Ron Wilson was the coach. And we actually, opposite of what you said, we were actually, I think we might've gotten along too well. We were all similar in age. I had known quite a few of those guys before I got there, played against them, obviously, quite a bit. And maybe it was loose. And for me, I never took the media in effect for where I was playing and how I was going to play. I always went out there and did my job and just played my role, you know, and I never felt that I was going to get attacked by the media. I never felt I was going to get attacked by the fans because I was going to go out there and play the way I was going to play. And I think when the players, you know, when you look at some of those big guys there, when they have that on their back and they have that, whatever you want to call a monkey on their back, that they have to perform. And if they don't perform, they get chirped, and not only by the media, but by the fans. If you're a guy that can't handle that, which was some of those guys, you're going to go the other way. And I think that's probably what happened. And I think they got stuck in a rut, and a lot of those guys were there for quite a few years. And they were probably just sick and tired of hearing the same stuff over and over. I mean, you know, just between for us, like we can go in, we know what we have to do. If we hit, if we fight, if we play hard, hey, I've done my job for the day. Imagine if you got a score, if you're not scoring, if you're in a goal scoring rut, and you're looking after the game going, oh no, what's going to happen? What am I going to hear? When am I going to go? And then the pressure just builds and builds and builds. And then next game, same thing happens. Now it's just adding to the fact. So I think that was a part. And then funny thing with, you mentioned Kessel and Carlisle. I got a funny story of when, cause I'd played for Carlisle in Anaheim. So I had already known. And actually Lupo was there too. And I played with Lupo in Anaheim for Carlisle. And when the talk came about Carlisle and a handful of the coaches coming in that were going to take over, I remember we were at dinner, and I was with Lupo, and I think Kessel was there too. And we were joking about Carlisle, and we were messing with Kessel because he's a guy that doesn't want to play for a guy like that. And I remember I think he was sweating more than I was on the plane. I think his nickname should have been Pitsy that night, because I swear we were giving it to him so bad about what he was going to be in for, and the bike club and the fat club and how he was going to have to work in practice and how long practices were and all this stuff. And all I can remember from that came out of Phil's mouth, and I still remember this like till the day, is, buddy, I'm just not going to do it. And he looks at all of us. He looks at us, and he just goes, buddy, I don't care what he says. I just don't care. I'm just not going to do it. And I'm just going to play my, I don't care. I'm not going to work out. And if he cares, I'm not going to do it. And what do you know? Carlisle comes in and I don't know if they, cause I wasn't there long after that. So I don't know how they, got along or didn't get along, but we had him on the edge of his seat for a couple of days.
I still remember that video of, they did like a lead up to one of those outdoor games, and Randy Carlisle came in the locker room, the lounge, and said something to Phil, and Phil's like, good one, Randy.
that's it right there. That's it in a nutshell.
Oh, that is so funny. I know. Did you like Carlisle? Was he good for you?
Yeah, you know what? I thought he was a great coach. He knows. And sometimes you would say that as a player, he was overboard. And I'm not going to say anything bad. You know, he could take, you know, well, it speaks for itself. There's a reason why there was a Carlisle rule in place with the NHLPA. And that's for a reason. Mm-hmm. But there were times where you know.
Well, tell the listeners what that rule is.
I can't tell you the exact numbers, but I know the rule is when you land or after a game or after a road game, if you're traveling, there's a certain amount of time where after you hit the ground or after a game on the amount of time that you have in between your next practice or when you have to be at the rink. So that came into place because we would land, and I know just from experience in Anaheim, we would land and fly out of LAX coming from Orange County, and it was a, you know, a good 45-minute drive, and some of those flights coming from out east that you'd come back in and you'd, you know, you wouldn't get to your house until 2-3 in the morning sometimes, and we'd be practicing at 10 o'clock, 10:30 next day, and there was no setback, you know, maybe here and there was a, you know, there was a little bit of wiggle room to practice a little bit later, but mostly every other team at that time was giving days off. And if you came from a long road trip or you had a long flight, whatever it was, like you just, the thing to do would be to get some rest. And so they caught it, and they put the Randy Carlisle rule in effect, and it made players get a little bit extra rest.
Yeah. Don't hang them up, Mike, put them on Randy Carlisle. So I didn't get along with Randy in Toronto. I wish I would have played for him because he felt like a guy who rewarded hard work. He rewarded the type of players that we are. And it's a shame that I had the kind of fallout that I did with him, where I was literally screaming in his face, calling him every name in the book, telling him I'm going to kill him, because he seems like a pretty legit guy.
See, I think, and I was going to touch on that part, which I didn't really get to say the good part about him, is that is something good about Randy, is that he knew, he appreciated his guys like us. He appreciated his hard workers. He appreciated his penalty kill guys. You know, those were his go-to guys, and he can pull you aside and tell you exactly what he wanted. And if you didn't do it, then you would know. And to be honest, the chirping, the way that he goes about himself is just Randy Carlisle. That's him. And until you understand that, you'll be in a situation where you're going to be in a yelling match where, you know, you almost have to shrug it off and give it back to him. He's a guy that wants it in return. And if you don't, then he'll just push you over. And he's,
yeah, I was shocked before the Kessel thing. I was trying to fight someone on the bench. I was like, who's going to jump out and fight me? And Randy came after me. He's like, what are you looking at? What are you looking at our bench for? I'm like, you better sit down, you fat. He's like, you don't talk. And we went back and forth like 15, 20 seconds.
I was playing for Vancouver, and we played against Anaheim a ton of times. And those were pretty much my only games that I played, because those were my first 2 years playing for Vancouver. I was healthy scratch all the time. But I had always played against Anaheim, and they had a tough team. That's the reason why I played. I remember one time I was in a scuffle with Travis Moan. And I don't know what happened. I accidentally hit him with my butt end. I cut his face open. I was cross-checking another player. Just something happened. And I was skating by their bench, and I hear him yell at me out of nowhere. He goes, you tree hugger. And I look back, and I was like, did that really just come out of his mouth? And I got back to the bench, and I was like inside laughing, like, man, he really just chirped me as a player. He chirped me as I was skating by the bench.
What's a tree hugger? Why?
I don't know. I didn't understand it at the time. I just kind of looked at it as something that he was chirping me about.
You should have been like, good one, Randy.
Isn't that the truth?
Mike, I want to ask. I asked John last year who was the biggest drill buster he's ever had as a teammate. And he goes, oh, with Mike Brown, without a doubt, Pitsy. What do you have to say about that?
I think that was a cop out for him to just give an answer. I'm the farthest away from the drill buster possible, because you would never see me in the front of a line, because I don't want to bobble any puck, because that's mostly what happened, is I'll mishandle the pass or something, or I'll go too hard and run into someone. But I was never a drill buster.
You busted drills. Listen to you. We would get you to go at the front of the line. It was always good, Mike. It's not a bad thing. I busted drills. I've had a practice canceled because I busted so many drills where the coach is like, just get off the ice. Mario, Jacques Lemaire, my first year, he's like, you guys better start practicing better or I'm going to end this right now. And I was in the front of the line. I made a pass. It was like 5 feet wide. He blew his whistle. He's like, get off the ice. I thought I was going to end my career. I'm like, he's going to send me down. It's over. So it's not a bad thing.
For me, it started in Vancouver. It was when I think it was my first year, and I couldn't handle a pass on my back end. I just couldn't. I couldn't catch it. And guys were snapping them. Guys were ripping them cross ice. Like, we do those cross ice warm-up drills where you got to pass it. And if you're on your back end, I'd be standing there. I'd be shaking in line like, oh, no, I'm up next. I'm on the left side. I'm going to catch this one on my back end. It just blows up like a grenade. Like, I know it's going to. And I'm thinking to myself, like, probably the worst thing I can do is think that this is going to happen, because that's what's going to happen. And I remember I just couldn't catch a pass on my back end. It just always blew up on me. And Rick Bonus was the assistant coach at the time. I remember he pulled me aside after one of the practices, and he literally passed me 1,000 pucks on my backhand until I caught one. And I swear to you, after 1,000 pucks, after 1,000 pucks like blowing up on my backhand, and he fired them at me, like literally fired them at my backhand, which was like impossible to grab. And I just held my stick as strong as I possibly could. And just like, after a couple of them, he's like, all right, we're done. And I swear, like, it helped me like throughout my career. Like, I was like, I'm confident to catch a puck on my backhand now. And
that's pretty funny.
It helped a lot.
This is how great hockey players are. You think they would help you out and like throw you a nice one, like maybe off the boards, or as soon as they know you're having a hard time with something, it's coming 100 miles an hour across the ice, and you gotta catch it. Like, they're not going to give you any edge. Bernsey is the worst at that.
I was like, as a healthy scratch in Vancouver, I was, I would rotate, and I would actually play D on sometimes. I would know I was on the lineup because they would put me in a gray jersey. I know I was the eighth D man. And I would, you know, if someone was injured or one of the Sedins wanted to take a practice off or something like that, they would put me on, they would give me the whatever jersey the top line was, blue jersey, and I'd come in for practice, and I'd see the blue jersey in my stall, like, oh yeah, I'm on first line, like, oh, you know, I knew it was up. But that would be the worst, because then we're doing entry plays, we're doing regroups and stuff, and those guys are snapping them at me, and I'm like, oh no, if I lose this puck, man, they're gonna kill me. Like, I'm gonna either get sent down, like, I don't know what's gonna happen. And I'd be so nervous to pass them the puck that, like, they would be on their backhand. It would be 2 feet behind, two feet in front of them. And they'd pull me aside. Hey, settle down. You know, you got to make
easy,
a tape-to-tape
Mikey.
Pass.
There's nothing worse than going to the rink expecting maybe to play. You're hoping to play, you know. And then you look in your stall, and the jersey there is a defensive jersey. And you're just like, well, practicing with the defenseman. Yeah. It is a soul-crushing couple seconds where you're just like, okay, I'm gonna practice with the defenseman. He has no plans. I didn't like that, but it was just part of the job. You know what I mean?
One time that backfired big time on me. I remember actually we were in Nashville, and I had the gray jersey. I had the practice jersey, and it was happening. It was happening for a good amount of time, like a couple weeks. And the seventh D man was Lawrence Nicolette, and I was the 13th forward. So I ended up being, so we had 12 forwards. So it made it 12 forwards and 8 D by them putting me back on D. And I don't know what it was, around like New Year's or something, or some holiday where we were going to have a day off. And I remember for pregame skate and practices, I was the 8th D man. And so me and Lawrence the night before, we had a good time. We went out, we were listening to some music, and we made a couple pit stops on the way. And I remember getting home pretty late back to the hotel. And what do you know, I'm defense in pregame skate, and I'm like just sweating, like just getting it all out, just sweating big time. And game time comes, they tell me to, you know, they give you the just show up for warmups, and we never know what's going to happen. Just show up for warmups. And I come for warmups, and they give me the tap. And I remember that was the worst feeling of pretty much my entire career, just completely backfired on me.
And you couldn't even string together a guilty game and pull one together?
Well, I did. 5 minutes? I did, but I'm saying that was probably one of the worst.
Yeah. Yeah. That's happened to me a few times. Just like, oh my gosh, the worst. Yeah. One story that I remember playing with you was we didn't play a lot together. We sat out quite a bit.
Yeah.
And so we finished our workout. I think we were jumping in the sauna, and we were doing push-ups in the sauna. And I what's that
standard
Yeah, standard operating procedure. Like, season's almost over. We got to get, you know, the body set for summer. And you told me that you can't do too many push-ups because you get too big. Is that true, or are you just pulling my leg?
No, I get – well, I mean, now I'll do whatever I want. You know, I don't have to be in playing shape. I look at it in two different ways. Before, when I was younger, I bulked up too much, and I couldn't handle a puck. I mean, I was lifting some pretty abnormal amounts of weight. I think I still have quite a bit of the records at the U.S. program from when I was 16, 17, 18 years old. But when I was playing, I didn't want to do that because, I don't know, I got some kind of genetic that works pretty quick. So if I work out hard, then I'll bulk up pretty quick.
So you think that you could, okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around this. So you were your most skilled. You could have been worse is what you're saying.
Is that what you were trying to think of?
Well, I was trying to phrase it in a nice way. And I'm like, okay, so you couldn't handle.
So basically, if I already have rocks as hands.
That's what I was thinking.
And I have hands like feet. If I make those rocks into boulders, think about what's going to happen to my hands.
That's really funny. When you said that, I was blown away. I'm like, man, I can't get an ounce of pectoral muscle if I tried. Even to this day, not that I work out at all anymore, but still, my chest is like, it is concave. It goes in. There's nothing there. And then I see you just like chiseled out of granite and you're not doing anything. I'm like, this is like, it's not fair.
That's a big misconception though. Like, hey, I always came into training camp in the best shape of my season of anything. Working hard. I work smart though. I take a bit of time off and then I go, I'm on or off. I got one switch. I either go 1,000 miles an hour or close to zero. And when I'm off.
Speaking of that, 1,000 miles an hour, tell everyone about the story of when you broke your ankle.
Oh, geez.
And then you went back on the ice and tried to play with a broken ankle. And I'm not talking like a hairline fracture. Just to tell us the story of that, because that is one of the most unbelievable stories I've ever heard.
Oh, this actually still haunts me when I wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bath, to go take a piss. I still feel it, just for the record. So I actually, our center got kicked out of the faceoff. I'm on wing, so I step in to take the draw, just not even ready at all. I go in. I forgot who I was going against, but I ended up getting pushed back off the draw. My toe of my skate got caught in a rut or got caught in the ice, and I got pushed backwards, and I ended up kind of just twisting as I fell. So when I got up, I thought I just twisted my ankle. I thought when I got, like, because it felt like an ankle sprain. So when I got up, I was skating around. It felt pretty sore. I was skating around a bit. I don't know if the whistle blew or I got back to the bench. When I got back to the bench, it was feeling pretty sore, like something either broke or something had sprained or whatever. So I go into the training room. They take my boot off. The doc's moving my foot around. For some weird reason, it doesn't. I no pain, absolutely no pain. And I know what happened now, so I'll say it was he basically put my foot and the bone back in the right place. And it was a spiral break. So by putting it back into place, it was holding together, I guess, by the spiral of the break. And when I put my boot back on, I literally felt like nothing had happened. Not even a sprain. Didn't even feel a single thing. And I don't know if that was adrenaline or not, but I just didn't feel anything. And I'm walking around and I'm moving my foot. I'm like, I can play. I'm good. And so I go back out next shift. And I remember it was just a big circle. And I remember the shift. I literally went from our bench, offensive zone forecheck, puck came out into the neutral zone. One of their players got it close to our bench, and I came 1,000 miles an hour to go and crush this guy. And my ankle buckles like literally 2 feet before I go to hit him. Like literally 2 feet before I go to hit him. I completely mangle. My whole body goes like completely limp, and I go flying into the boards. Like I might have even sprained my neck instead of my ankle. And that was the end of it. I took my boot off and I had a huge softball around my ankle, and they took the picture, and that ended up being broken. The funny part about that story is I did all my rehab for the ankle, and this is what pissed me off. is I did my 2 months, whatever. I was wearing the boot, and I had the little push cart that you put your knee on. So everybody was making fun of me for riding that thing around, which wasn't too fun. And then I remember the team was on the road one time, and I was having to do the first. I think it was my first time on the ice since I'd broken it. And I was just, you know, I was with, I think it was Mike Ricci who was there to watch and just kind of supervise. And I was out there, and I know pushing through the scar tissue, hey, it's going to take some pain. And I've gone through numerous injuries to know that. And I'm skating around and I start sweating, and I'm like, man, this isn't feeling right. You know, something's hurting. And I'm like, okay, we'll just push it. And I'm pushing, and I'm just tearing up. And I'm like, man, I can take pain, but this is like, something's not right here. And Ricci's on the phone with Razor, and he's going, no, it's fine. You know, the doc cleared and it's all good. And I don't know, long story short, I get off, my foot is so sore. My ankle is so sore. And it was the tibia, just for the record. And so I'm like, they're like icing it. And no one's still there. And I give it a day break, and I come back out, and the same thing happens the next day. And I'm like, it's worse. I can't bear this pain. Like, this is worse. What do you know? We go get an X-ray. I re-broke it. Oh. Another. That was the year I played 12 games. 12 oh. games. I broke my finger, I think, in the beginning of the year too.
Is that because you're and I'm not just making fun. Is that because you're just too powerful on your stride? Like, is that where your power comes, you know, kind of, it's a hindrance. When you pushed off, you might've just re-broke it. It was probably fine. You broke it again.
You know what? I wish I knew the answer to it. I don't know. It could have been, I mean, I don't know. It could have been my skate. Like, it could have been the area. Like, that's right where your, the ankle part of your skate comes up. So when you bend and skate, it could be my stride. I mean, you know, you're right. I am a very powerful skater. So
was that demoralizing? Was that just like, man, what else can go wrong? And then you saw me out there just absolutely killing it.
That was the worst part about it, is how good you were playing and me just having to watch it. Like,
so many goals.
Yeah, so many goals.
It was incredible.
I love doing my upper body workouts during that time.
Just the horn.
That's funny.
You scored again. Oh.
That's funny though. We were just FaceTiming with those. We were talking about the our old teammates from the Sharks there, and I remember it was funny because I remember like Jumbo and Pavelski came to me one time, and that was when I was wearing the boot, and I couldn't even bag skate. I wasn't even like a skater that wasn't going to play, that was healthy scratch, that was just going to like skate on the road, like bring him on the road just in case, or bring him on the road because everyone's going and he'll get his conditioning in, you know, so there's no like trainers, there's no equipment guy staying back. So the only ice that you're going to get is on the road. And I remember them coming to me and be like, Pitsy, like, you got to come on this road trip. We're flying you out just so you can be with the boys. Just, we want you to play cards. We need you in the card game. We need you in the locker room. And I'm thinking to myself, like, I'm going to be a pile of crap. Like, I'm not bag skating. Like, what am I going to do? I'm going to be just hanging out. Like, you think I'm going to be good?
Mascot. Hey, that's what makes those guys great, is they just want people around to hang out. Like, I played on a lot of teams. You've played on a lot of teams. I talked to a few guys from other teams. I consistently talk to most guys from the Sharks.
Totally.
And that's rare.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just so cool that we had that relationship, and it's still kind of going strong, but I don't know. And it's still cool that we're close, Mikey.
Yeah. You know, the one thing I like about it, you know, Jumbo for sure. He's, you know, he's such a Hall of Fame guy, and he's been around for so long, but he understands the role. He understands these types of players, and he knows, you know, what's needed, and just the appreciation factor and the respect factor, you know, like even Pavelski and Burns and all these guys, like they understand what it takes, and not only for them to succeed, but the whole package. And I think that's where the respect comes from. That's where, you know, we get all that appreciation. Like I said, there's only a handful of them, you know, it's so easy for those guys to just be like, eh, whatever, you'll be in and out.
Yeah.
And then see you later.
Yeah. To invest some...
be such good guys. And it's
rare. Yeah. It's not the rule. It's the exception. And speaking of hard work, I want to mention your little training, your MSB performance. So tell us a little about that. What's going on, Mikey?
Well, so you hit it in a nutshell when you were talking about how strong I was when I do push-ups in the off season, and basically admiring what I would do, you know, just in case you wanted to work hard and you wanted to bulk up. So this basically came from that. I mean, when I was playing, I always did it my way. I always worked out my way. Like I said, I had an off and an on switch. I always came in top shape. I always won the Ironman awards going into training camp. And for me, when I was done, and I did it different, like I said, I didn't go to a trainer. I felt like going to a trainer was going to be just doing the same as everybody else. I wanted to just have it my way and train in an outside of the box type of style. When I was done playing, I started coaching. And actually what happened before coaching was I got a hold of the guys where I used to play my youth hockey, I should say. And they had a training facility there, and I wanted to run basically my program to youth, to college, to pros, semi-pros, whatever, and give this program out. And they ended up roping me into coaching, which was great. I've coached at pretty much every level now, and now coaching my two kids' teams, the Mites and Squirts. But I ended up just doing basically private training at the rink, running programs, boxing, which I've done my whole career, and foot speed, strength, and that led me to being the strength and conditioning coach of the entire organization, which was 20 something teams, a couple days a week, you know, 2, 3, 4 days a week, depending on the schedules of the teams. And I liked it a lot. And what I did was I basically built a brand from being the strength coach and just doing kind of the private training at the rink. I built a brand of what I do. And if you want to do private training, I'm here to basically tailor a different workout to whatever you are. It doesn't have to be hockey. You can be youth. You can be adult. You can be injury prone, rehab. I mean, you know, as well as I do, we've done a lot of rehabbing throughout our career, and just being that, having that knowledge is what I dish back to people that are in need. And basically right now is what I'm doing is doing team training. So teams contact me. I got a couple high school teams and anybody else that is in need of team training. And I'm doing, before COVID started, it was in person. And then when COVID hit, it was right for me to do it online, which was better for me and other people because I can hit people that are outside of the Chicagoland area.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's kind of at a standstill of doing in-person training for me just because of the way this COVID hit and what's open and what people have free. But right now I have the website open for people that if they want to contact, they can do some team training, they can do individual training, and you don't even have to be a hockey player. I can do just basic strength and conditioning and footwork and everything else in between.
And if you want to see the results, just go to Mike's Instagram and you'll see what you'll get if you train with Mike for 1 week. Because the guy knows what he's doing. So, yeah, go check out msbperformance.com. You'll get personal training from Mike Brown. Pitsy, this was great, buddy.
Yeah, of course, man. This is great to be in contact again.
I know. We'll have to teach you how to listen to a podcast so you can listen to yourself. It's the best.
No, you know what I was going to ask you, though, is I was thinking about, like I said at the beginning, of doing a podcast. Like, I know nothing about it. Like, zero. I've done a few of them, and, you know, I wouldn't even know where to start. We didn't even know what to talk about, but I wanted to see your feeling as of, what do you think? Do you think I would succeed?
Well, I think we should. Yeah, I think you could. I think you really could. You could get the guests. You got a good personality. We'll see. I don't know if I want the competition, though, to be honest with you.
Well, I think I'd go more like uncensored type, like.
Oh, you know, you'd be spitting chiclets.
Well, I don't want to copy them. Like they know about hockey. I don't follow hockey.
Yeah, that's true. Well, let's talk off air. I can put you in touch with some people.
All right, cool.
All right. Well, thank you, Mike Brown. I appreciate it. Tim, anything?
No, thanks for coming on, Mike. This has been great.
Yeah, of course. No problem. It was fun.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. We'll see you on Friday. Cheers.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter at @dropping_gloves for episode highlights, behind-the-scenes content, sneak peeks, and giveaways. Check out johnscottallstar.com/shop for merchandise, including t-shirts, hats, hoodies, and so much more. And please, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. It's so important to helping us grow so we can keep delivering the hockey content and interviews with the players you love. Thanks, and see you next time.